Hello and welcome to the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast. This is Tribune Sports Editor Joe Waljasper, along with Tribune Basketball Beat Writer Daniel Jones and Tribune Football Beat Writer Blake Topmeyer. We'll start with basketball. Danny, Missouri now, I believe, 5-12 overall, 0-5 in the SEC. When you watch them play, are you seeing signs of improvement from the beginning of the season?
Not really on the whole. I think if you look at some of the individuals, you can see some things. Like Terrence Phillips is pretty much the first person that comes to mind. He's been playing pretty well recently and shooting over 40% from three in SEC play. So that's an improvement, I think. Other than that, I'm not really sure if you can look and say that things are better than they were. I was really looking for signs of improvement out of Kevin Puryear, which hasn't really happened, I don't think, this year. And some of their other sophomores, KJ Walton, has shown that he's a better player now than he was at the beginning of the season. His two best performances came in November. So I don't know. I don't really see many big improvements in the freshman class either. So,
kind of a regression, certainly in the case of Frankie Hughes.
Yeah, definitely in Frankie's case. And now that freshman class is down to two. It was five at the beginning of the year. So, no, I don't know. I think if you look at Terrence Phillips, you see some signs of improvement. He's shooting the ball better, and he's really been kind of the guy leading the charge. But other than that, I don't see any signs of improvement, things that make me think, wow, things are looking up, and these are things you can really hang your hat on going forward.
A lot of what we're going to talk about with Missouri basketball is more about the future, I think, just because the present, it seems like we're on a treadmill.
Right.
Which players on the roster now do you think could be key players on a winning team, whether that be next year or 2 years down the line, as opposed to role players? Is there anybody on this team that you think you can build a winning team around?
I think you could take Jordan Barnett and put him on a winning team, and I think he could be a piece on a winning team. I don't know if he could be the leading scorer, which is what they're asking him to be right now. I don't know if that's just in his DNA. It was in high school, but I mean, they've been asking that out of him since he's put on him as a uniform, and he's kind of been reluctant to do it. So I think he has the athleticism to be able to be a key component on a winning team. I've thought that about Kevin Puryear in the past, but I just don't know if I see that out of him right now. He's just, and part of the reason
I think he has an athletic ceiling.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's 6'7", which as a forward, I mean, that's tough. You're constantly, you know, you're smaller than the people that you're playing against in conference play. So I've thought that about him in the past, and I'm not sure now. I guess we'll just kind of see you're right that he has an athletic ceiling that he's kind of hitting right now. If he can maybe develop some other parts of his game and utilize those. In that game against Alabama, they were talking about it at the press conference. Kim Anderson was, Kevin Puryear was pretty much a ghost in that game, and he was getting double teamed. But of course, Russell Woods was also getting double teamed, and he finished with double-digit points. So, I mean, good players are just able to overcome that however they need to, whether it's going to the other hand or shooting jump shots or going to the foul line. So maybe Kevin Puryear might be that guy in a year or maybe 2 years. I think maybe Terrence Phillips would be a good sixth man on a winning team, somebody you could bring off the bench, who could maybe be a spark. I would say the rest of this roster would be role players on a winning team. I don't really have any doubts about that.
So if a new coach comes in next year, the success, I think, going forward would really be dependent on recruiting a higher caliber player than what's there now. It's not a matter of simply coaching this group up and having that be the core.
I think, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to get better players in here, and certainly better shooters. They just, I mean, they're historically bad from three-point range. I think you could get more wins out of this group. I don't think this group should have, you know, lost games to North Carolina Central and Lipscomb. I know we've talked about how they didn't look, you know, it didn't look like those games that Mizzou was exceptionally more talented than those teams were. But still, I mean, I think you could find a way to utilize those players in a way that they are getting those wins. So certainly going forward, the major aspect of rebuilding this program is going to be in the recruiting, which is tough because I believe they have two scholarships now for the next class. So you're going to have to get two guys in that are major difference makers. They already have C.J. Roberts. So what you do with that next?
There could definitely be more turnover before then.
That's true. But at the same time, now you're looking at getting guys after the season's over, and most of the good ones have already been plucked. So, yeah, big rebuilding project again, and it's going to go through recruiting, I think, no doubt. You can get more out of these players, but I don't think you'll be able to turn the program around with these players.
When Missouri went to the SEC, I think you could argue that they were probably, you know, third, fourth, fifth best basketball program in the SEC at that point, based on recent history. I mean, they're unquestionably last now. So I ask, how good a job is this? How attractive is it? Because when you look at Missouri, they are paying their coach the least amount in the SEC. Attendance is lowest in the SEC. Obviously, performance is worse in the SEC. Is there a reason to believe this is better than the worst job in the SEC?
I think so. I think those things are things that could be fixed. Certainly the attendance. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that building was full every weekend. You have two major population centers in the state, which is something that not very many SEC states can say, certainly not Alabama or Mississippi or Louisiana or Arkansas. So I think that's a major factor. You have history here. I think there's people that are really emotionally invested in this basketball program. Maybe not at the moment, but if it were to come back, I think there's a significant emotional attachment, unlike places like at Auburn or...
Yeah, I don't think you'd have to completely overhaul the, at least amongst the older fans, the mindset of, oh, let's go to a basketball game. That is, I think, back there in the back of their mind,
right.
Although not being practiced currently.
Right. No, I agree. I think there's a sentiment out there, just like Gabe DeArmon wrote a column about it, make me care. I think there's an element of just make me want to come to a game because I would like to, but there's no point in me going. I think there's an emotional attachment there. Plus, I think the facilities really compare well. I mean, Mizzou Arena is a really, really nice facility, and, I think that probably compares pretty favorably across the conference. So I think there are pieces that can be shined and used to lure in potential new coaches if they go that route. We'll see what Jim Sterk's pitch is, I suppose, but I think it's a favorable SEC job despite its current woes, and certainly the roster situation is tough. But I did an article on Frank Martin a couple days ago, and he inherited a just mess of a situation at South Carolina, and it hasn't taken him all that much time to figure things out over there. So it's possible. I think, you know, if you get the right guy, 4 years, I mean, you can start to get things back on track. But it kind of depends on the moves they make at the end of this year. I mean, that's going to be just really important. I'm curious to hear your thoughts just on that, on where you think this program kind of lines up in terms of SEC jobs. Do you find it to be a favorable SEC job?
I think some of the things in terms of the population of the state and the talent of basketball in Missouri could be an asset. I think basketball tends to be more of a national recruiting sport compared to football, and Missouri has really struck out, particularly in the city of St. Louis, with some great, great players, even when Missouri was good. Mm-hmm. So while that's certainly not a drawback, being in Missouri, it has not been a huge advantage, I don't think, to them in recent history. So that would mitigate it slightly. I think for a coach, I think the biggest thing you would be selling, honestly, is you're in a Power 5 job in a conference where there's only one great program. So there's room for upper mobility, and there would be virtually zero pressure if you went even 10 and 20 your first year. You know, it would still seem like improvement. So I think those are the things you would sell. I don't think you would have much fun selling this roster to a coach. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you would have – I think most people who are coaches are old enough to remember that 4 years ago, this was a pretty good job, and that people will come if they're good. It's a matter of whether those coaches can spin it far enough forward and think, but how long is it going to take me to get them to where they're even an NIT type team, to where it's not this graveyard? Because when you're trying to recruit, you're not trying to convince 60-year-olds that the good old days are coming back. You're trying to recruit people who only remember the current status.
Right.
So I think for Missouri, they would have to be willing, you know, I think Kim Anderson, what, makes the low 1.2 or 1.3 million or whatever he makes now. You're going to have to spend more than that, sizably more than that, which they can. And I think you're going to expand your assistant coaching salary pool significantly, because the number one thing, whoever the coach, next coach is, needs to hire someone who is a very good recruiter. And those are the sort of the most expensive assistants out there. So I think you got to be prepared to spend a lot more. But I think the one slight drawback to that in Missouri is you're also not paying your football coach very much. And if he goes 7-5 or 8-4 next year, and suddenly the basketball coach is making more than he is, then you're paying a lot of people a lot more money. But that's just the situation they're in. They're going to have to, I don't think I'm misstating the case when they've got the lowest paid men's basketball, football, and baseball coaches. We don't know about Vanderbilt, but I feel fairly certain, at least among at least certainly among baseball coaches, probably among basketball, and I'm not sure about football. I don't know exactly if Bandy might pay a little less, but they have been getting off on the cheap for quite a while now, and I think, and we can talk about this now, what kind of person do we think would be attracted to this job? Let's start. I don't know that a sitting Power 5 conference guy would have any reason to come here. I don't think you could dangle enough money more than what another Power 5 conference guy is making, unless it's a Power 5 conference guy who's getting fired or is afraid of getting fired.
Right.
I think we've seen interesting rumors, such as with Lorenzo Romar, who is, who, if not in danger of being fired this year, certainly can see through his Frank Haith glasses that maybe it's time to start playing the exit strategy. He, I think, is an interesting case just because he hasn't had much success, but has obviously the ties to the Porters, who that could be an instant injection of talent. That's an interesting rumor that's been floating around.
Yes.
Here's a weird one, and then we'll get to maybe more realistic candidates. What happens if Mike Anderson gets fired at Arkansas? Would Missouri be interested in Mike Anderson?
I demand that would just be such a soap opera and be so exciting to cover.
Here's how Mike Anderson can sell it. He can say, you know, 5 years ago, I called up Steve Wilentick and said, I plan to retire at Missouri. And I still plan to retire at Missouri. Bring me back.
Take that, Steve.
Bring me back. I think with him, at least, you would say he's a guy that certainly, I think throughout his years, never really came close to losing a non-conference home game against, you know, at least amongst the guarantee games. His style of play seemed to really blow those kind of teams out of the water. I think he's a guy that would certainly have a higher floor than what we've seen at Missouri. I don't know if he's run out of family members who can put them over the top and become NCAA tournament teams, but he would be, that would be an interesting case.
Absolutely. Probably the, I mean, would you say the second best coach in Missouri history behind Norm Stewart? I mean, Norm Stewart's here forever, but I mean, Mike Anderson took him to
certainly in modern history. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, man, it would just be incredible to see the reaction in Columbia if that were to happen. Mike is an interesting guy. Just, I didn't know him when he was here, but I was down in Arkansas and I was reading through old clips, your column at when the first time he came back to Mizzou Arena since he left when he was with Arkansas. And just the brouhaha he had with Frank Haith, and how he was saying, you know, not all guys recruit or inherit teams like that. He made a comment too, just about, you know, man, when I was up here, the arena was dead, and now look how exciting it is. And anyway, just an interesting guy. Boy, that would be something I would love to cover. I think that would be very interesting. But I mean, beggars can't be choosers in that situation. I mean, if you're looking at hiring a new coach and Mike Anderson is out there, then why not give him a look?
Well, I think more likely their candidates would come from a Group of Five conference.
No, yeah, I agree with you.
Or I guess that's more of a football term, but more of a mid-major conference.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, really the only names that really get thrown around are people that you know more from past successes. Kelvin Sampson, obviously. I think had Macrode still been here, would have been a more of a candidate because of his connection to Houston. But I guess I kind of wonder, do we think a coach who leads a mid-major program to the NCAA tournament is willing to take a job like Missouri? Or because mid-major programs can now pay, I mean, a lot of their coaches are making more than Kim Anderson does, is this become the kind of job that they'll say, oh, I'll wait until something better comes along?
If I was a guy like Archie Miller, who coaches at Dayton and has had a pretty good career there, he's taken them to the NCAA tournament a number of times. He gets paid very well, if not better than Kim Anderson does at the moment. I mean, I feel like you would look at this job and say, there is potential there that I don't currently have at Dayton. Just in terms of, you know, being in a major conference, getting, you know, playing in an arena with 15,000 seats, getting paid more, just, you know, things of that nature. I think that there are opportunities here that mid-major coaches don't have, but it is about just, are you willing to invest and possibly not even just invest 4 years into rebuilding a program, but if it doesn't succeed, then what happens to your career? Because, I mean, someone like him has opportunities every time there's a Power 5 job open. And so,
yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the successful ones, if you actually know their name, they're right. Probably going to have a better job offer than Missouri.
Right, exactly.
That's just, I think, the way it is.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the mid-major question. I mean, it's tough. I think there are opportunities here that you wouldn't get there. And I don't know how attractive it might be. I agree. I think they're going to have to probably pay out a little bit more. You know, it's going to be harder to attract somebody away from a mid-major than it is a Division II school.
Yeah, you may have to pay like a small market baseball team wanting a free agent and overpay just to get out of this rut. Moving on, Missouri women's basketball. Maybe Blake could handle this since he was more recently on the Mizzou women's basketball beat.
Can I add something on the men's thing before we change gears? I think they can get a name. I guess maybe I'm looking at things through rose-colored glasses, but or black and gold-colored glasses maybe, but I don't think they can get a Greg Marshall. That's the one that fans seem to be hanging on to, but I think they can get a name. You look at, I mean, who would have thought Auburn could have got Bruce Pearl? Who would have thought Mississippi State could have got Ben Howland? Who would have thought?
That's a name with baggage. So I think they could get a Kelvin Sampson, someone like that.
But maybe South Carolina got Frank Martin. I mean, I think they can get a name. I don't think they have to settle for a mid-major type coach, but maybe I'm seeing things wrong. But I think basketball is a type of sport that you can reinvent yourself. I mean, it takes three good players. It's not like football where if you inherit a roster that's garbage, it's going to take – it takes one good signing class and you're in the WNIT. We're getting ready to talk about women's hoops. You're in the NIT the next year. So I guess, I don't know. I think they should not try to sell themselves short. And if they're willing to throw a little bit of money around, I think they could get somebody.
I think you could get a name. You probably couldn't get a name that is in play for other Power 5 jobs, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't know why at this point you would pick Missouri over another Power 5 job.
Would you pick Missouri over, like, Purdue?
No.
You wouldn't?
Not in basketball.
Virginia Tech?
No. I think, no.
Okay.
I think even the conference they're in now, while could be spun as good because it's not a difficult conference, if you're constantly getting three teams in the NCAA tournament, you know, that's a pretty low percentage of 14 overall teams. And there's some pretty good, or at least coaches with some pedigree now that are sort of spinning their wheels, I feel like. It's early in their tenures, but Bruce Pearl has done virtually nothing. We'll see if, you know, Mike Anderson had it rolling at a Big 12 school and has spun his wheels at Arkansas. We'll see with Ben Howland. We'll see with Avery Johnson. But I don't know. I think it may be even worse than older fans think. I guess every time there's a job opening, I think you just have to think, okay, yes, we may offer a better situation than that person is at now, but we may not offer a better situation than the other schools' openings now.
All right, we can turn the page
now. All right. Women's basketball. They had lost three games in a row. Then they came back last week and won at Vanderbilt, which is a struggling team, but still a road win. And then they upset Texas A&M at home, which was a 25th-ranked team. So way early, obviously, but I think their RPI is scooting up into the 40s anyway. So they're at least in the conversation, I think, in the NCAA tournament. Do you feel like, from what you've seen out of them, that this is a team that still has a shot at that?
Yeah, I think they got a chance. Their RPI as of today is 49th, so not in a position where you'd feel great if it was selection Monday. But, you know, I mean, there's still time to bump that up a little bit, and certainly in the area where you're in the conversation. Historically, they say women's basketball in the SEC, if you can go 8-8, you're in. I don't know that history will apply in this case because Missouri has those two losses to IUPUI and to SLU, which aren't terrible losses. Those teams aren't terrible, but they're not good losses. They're resume damaging losses. So I think they may need to go 9-7 in league play. I don't know how good I would feel if they were 8-8 and you're expecting an NCAA bid. 8-8 would put them at 18 wins overall. I would think they would need to win a minimum of one game in the SEC tournament. But I think if they can, they're 3-3 in the league right now. I think if they can finish 9-7 and get to 19 wins going to the SEC tournament, I think they'd be in decent shape. They got a 3-game stretch coming up that I think is going to be pretty key. They play on the road against Arkansas, which is an RPI right around 100. That's a game they need to win. And then they have home games against Kentucky and Auburn. Both of those are top 20 RPI teams. If they could win even one out of two of those and win on the road at Arkansas, I think they'd be sitting in decent shape. I think that would push their RPI up a little bit. You know, they'd be sitting then with a 5-4 SEC mark going down the back stretch. So if they can go 2-1 in these next three, I think their outlook starts to improve a little bit.
And they did upgrade their non-conference schedule a bit over what we'd seen in recent years. It's still not a murderer's row, but they did go play Washington and
right.
Play Georgia Tech, at least in the tournament. So they played a few more name brand teams than they had in the past.
Yeah, certainly they're in the conversation in a way that I didn't think they would be whenever they lost those two games to IUPUI and to SLU. But you know, Sophie Cunningham delivered a big-time performance in the overtime win over A&M, and that was one I think they needed on the resume, and they need a couple more like that. But those are the type of wins that you have to have. I mean, you know, it's more than just meeting the benchmarks. I think you got to have a couple of those resume boosters. Not that A&M is the program that they've been in some recent years under Gary Blair, but that's still a good win that'll kind of be talked about when it comes to selection time. And if they can beat Kentucky or Auburn, Auburn's been kind of the surprise team in the SEC women's hoops this year. Either one of those games on their home floor would be a good win on the resume.
They gave Kentucky a pretty good game on the road, too. They started out great, terrible middle two quarters, and then closed it out at the end, so that would seem to be a home game within reach for them. Football, Blake, signing day is a few weeks away. Maybe just give us a little state of the union of Missouri football recruiting.
Well, there's not been much momentum recently. They're sitting at 20 commits, and that includes the three early enrollees. They can take up to 28 because with the three early enrollees, that means you can still sign 25 on signing day. So they can take eight more to push them to 28. I don't know that they're going to get there, and if they were to get there, they'd have to have some more roster attrition, which I think is going to happen either way, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. But they need more commits on the defensive tackle spot. Right now, I mean, that's a position of need. They're losing Josh Augusta. They're losing Ricky Hatley. Terry Beckner is rehabbing the knee, and so it's like, when is he going to be? He should be available for next season. But bottom line is they're thin at depth there right now, and they only have one defensive tackle commitment, junior college guy, and they're targeting a couple more junior college guys. There's a pair of teammates from Eastern Arizona Junior College, both defensive tackles, Walter Palmore and Malik Young, that have Missouri offers, haven't committed yet, but they have Missouri offers, so that I think the hope is that they could get one or both of them, and I think they're probably looking, I would think they're looking to add 2, 3, maybe even 4 more defensive tackles, but you know, we're getting to the stage where it's kind of a question now whether they can do that, but they certainly want to add at least a couple more. I think from here on out, most of the commits that you're going to see are probably going to come on the defensive side of the ball. Of the 20 guys that they have pledged the class so far, 11 of them are on offense. 5 of those guys are on the offensive line. So they're in pretty good shape offensively, just in terms of numbers and areas they needed to address on offense. It's the defensive side where I think they really need to add a few more pieces, and at the defensive tackle spot, no question they need to add a couple more guys.
Back in December, I believe it was the real ice storm day when they were making the announcement about the south end zone. That was right at the time where Marvin Zanders had announced his transfer, and we asked Barry Odom if he wanted to maybe add an extra quarterback at that time, and he sounded like he would like to if they could find the right one. Hasn't happened, and plus they lost the commitment of the one quarterback they did have, Ray Estes, who flipped to Minnesota. So now they've really only got three scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. Any thoughts of finding someone to hand a scholarship to as a quarterback, or are they going to go in with 3?
I think it would, at this point, it would kind of come as a surprise. It's not, there's no names that are being thrown about. It would be a little bit of a surprise, I think, unless it would be a case of, you know, taking a JUCO kid that maybe is just not really on our radar. That sort of happened with Jack Lowry when he transferred in. But yeah, I think there's a chance that they could end up with just the 3 scholarship quarterbacks, which is okay if nobody gets hurt. That's kind of the bare minimum that you would like to roll into a season with. I don't think losing Estes really hurts them all that much. That one all along always kind of struck me as a case of they were fine if they got Estes, but really they wanted his teammate, Jeff Thomas, and so I think it was kind of hoped that it would be a package deal of if you could convince the quarterback to come, then maybe he could bring along the 4-star wide receiver, Jeff Thomas, with him. And it's been kind of known for a while now that Jeff Thomas is, barring some huge shock, is not coming to Missouri. He's announced his 5 finalists, and Missouri's not among them. And so, you know, I think it's kind of been assumed, too, that Estes would back out on that commitment. And, you know, P.J. Fleck had offered him, and Estes had committed when Fleck was at Western Michigan, and then immediately offered him when he went to Minnesota. So that wasn't a big surprise to see him flip, and I don't think it was a big loss because, you know, in the end, they're not going to get Jeff Thomas anyway. So I think that's okay, but I do think, you know, if an opportunity presented itself for them to get another quarterback, they would probably think about it. But I think that it is possible that they could go without, and that would put a huge priority on landing at least one quarterback in the 2018 class.
Yeah, it would seem like it would be a pretty easy sell for if you're Missouri, of the lack of people in front of you at that position and the fact that, you know, by the time that person would get on campus, Drew Locke would be a senior. So, yeah, I think it's imperative they don't just get a quarterback, but maybe find the next franchise guy amongst the class of 2018.
Yeah, I think it'd be easy to sell it in 2018. Mm-hmm. 2017, I think, is a harder sell because you're telling a guy he's probably going to sit for 2 years behind Locke, and that's always a tough sell to quarterbacks. But yeah, 2018, that would be the priority number one is finding the quarterback of the future.
On successive Sundays, you had a couple interesting stories. One about Missouri starting a new outbound ticket sales program, which they hadn't done in the past, where I guess before they were more kind of sitting and waiting for people to come to them, and now they've enlisted in concert with Learfield, I believe, a sales team to aggressively call and market and try to get people to buy more season tickets. That's one. And then number two, have hired Howard Richards, the former player and former Secret Service man and CIA man and color analyst on the radio, to be kind of a liaison to St. Louis. and help improve relations over there. So maybe each of those topics, maybe touch on what benefit you think that might be to Missouri.
Yeah, in terms of the outbound ticket sales, to me, I can't really see much negative in this. Maybe I'm just not looking at it the right way, but it seems like a smart move. It was kind of, from what I understand, the brainchild of Brian White, who's in that role that Ren Baker used to have. Is it's not the deputy AD role, but in for all intents and purposes, kind of still the second in command and executive associate AD for external relations. And seemed like his brainchild, and it seems like a smart idea. I mean, you know, when your teams are good, I think you can just sit back and send out the season ticket renewal form, and everybody renews, and people are buying single game tickets and all is well. But when your teams are bad, or even mediocre, I think there's got to be more push. And you know, now they'll still have their ticket operations staff, and as the way Brian White put it, they'll be the defensive coordinator and handling things like printing and distribution of tickets, which is what they were kind of always doing all along. But now they have an outbound staff that goes on the offensive, and their sole job really is to sell tickets. And I think the best part for Missouri is that this outbound team will be working on a commission-based payout system. So it's not like they're paying them some exorbitant flat fee. They're getting paid based on what they're selling, and so the motivation is to sell. And for Missouri, they're still getting a cut, the majority of the cut of any of the sales that they make. And then also on top of that, I think it's smart that every season ticket holder now will have a direct person that they deal with that's kind of their account manager, which is the way pro sports work. If you have season tickets to a professional sports team and you have an issue of any sort, or just want to air grievances, those season ticket holders have their person, their guy or gal that they call and lends them a sympathetic ear and usually smooths thing over, and by the end of the phone call, all is well. That hasn't happened previously at Missouri, and now it will. And to me, that all makes sense. I think it was kind of mind-boggling to me that that this type of stuff wasn't already happening.
But, I agree with you, Blake. I'm not a season ticket holder for anything, but I was surprised too that there wasn't something like that already in place. It certainly seemed like all, you know, good things, more positives than negatives, certainly.
Yeah, and with the group sales, it makes sense too, because now they can, you know, make a more comprehensive effort. I think, you know, if you're having a certain group sale day, to go after those groups and to try to sell those single game tickets. With Howard Richards, I don't know what to think of it. I mean, it seems like a decent idea, I guess. Basically, to me, the job is like make St. Louis like Missouri. Really, in a nutshell, I think is the job, and I think it's the right guy to do it. I mean, Howard Richards, from what I gather, is a very well respected voice in St. Louis, has a lot of connections in St. Louis, is African American, so resonates with the African American community at a time where I think that's needed, and so I think it ticks all of those boxes. I mean, in a way, does it seem like a golden parachute job? Yeah, kind of. But if it benefits the department, is it a bad thing? No. So if they're going to do it, they hired the right guy to do it, I think. I think you could question why it even needed to be done in the first place. I mean, I think Missouri probably should have had a stronger rapport with St. Louis all along, but you know, you can't fix the problems of the past. You can just deal with what's in front of you. And if there is some sort of disconnect between Mizzou and St. Louis, which I think there is a little bit of one, or at least maybe not as strong as a connection as Missouri needs, then this is one way to go about strengthening those bonds. And like I said, this is absolutely the right guy to do it, I think. I mean, you know Howard better than I do, Joe, but I think his connections run really deep in St. Louis. And I think in terms of a respected voice, I mean, he went to high school there, he stayed in state for college, and then really just his background, as you said, you know, he goes and plays in the NFL, but more interesting than that, he works 13 years in the CIA. I mean, it's going to be harder to find someone with, you know, I think a stronger, you know, resume in terms of a guy that you want to put out on the front line and say, hey, this is the type of person that can come from this school than what you have in Howard Richards, I think.
One interesting thing, for as long as I've ever worked here, there's always been, real or perceived, a why can't we connect with St. Louis in the way that you never hear about Kansas City? And I don't know why that is, if there is some sort of maybe more entitlement in St. Louis, that why aren't you here being nice to us, that you don't hear out of Kansas City coaches. But it seems like anytime there's a problem, it seems to be St. Louis related as opposed to Kansas City related. I don't know why that is.
Well, as someone from neither city and not even from this state, it's always seemed to me that St. Louis's ego is just out of control in a way that I do not understand. And Kansas City is just kind of like, eh, you know, we like our city, but it's fine. You know, if you don't like us, that's fine.
That was Blake Topmeyer with that gross generalization. So. btopmeyer@tribmail.com
Yes.
If you need to reach
him. Send the hate mail, because St. Louis has an ego that I don't know where it's coming from.
Well, Blake has well established his disdain for river cities, because the largest rats live near the rivers, as he said, and he's often been concerned about getting stabbed anytime he gets near a river. And Kansas City, while Missouri River does run through it, is not really defined as the river city the way
that's
that
true. You always got to be, you know, you get down toward the river, and you got to be careful. That's just the way it goes in these river towns. That's just the way it goes.
Okay. Well, hopefully Howard can solve all those problems. River towns are hard to manage. So thank you for joining us again on another Mizzou Sports Podcast.